Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me to look back at week three in the NFL and ahead to week four is my usual partner from Sky Sports coverage, Jeff Rimbold. And Jeff, there were some more one-sided games in the NFL in week three than we've seen in the first 2 weeks of the year, but no shortage of storylines again.
Absolutely great football. I mean, by a lot of people. There was some bad football, too, but there was some amazing football played. And last night, Aaron Rodgers was just absolutely in control. He looked so like it was too easy almost. And he has that kind of mellow approach or you know, just that body language that's so confident. But when you watched him play last night, he did everything he wanted to do to the Chiefs. And that's, you know, that Chiefs defense, not a bad defense.
No, not at all. We will get on to all looking back at some of the big games and storylines. But as you've mentioned Aaron Rodgers, Jeff, let's talk about him for a second then. Because I can remember for years now, actually, you know, dating back to they used to tease me when I was on Radio 5 because, you know, I said then that Aaron Rodgers to me was the best quarterback in the NFL from about 2009, 2010 onwards. No one throws a nicer pass in my view. And we've got a question from Tom Marshall who asks us. He says, has anybody ever thrown the ball as well as Aaron Rodgers? He is unmissable to watch. And the only person I can think of, Jeff, in terms of pure passing and, you know, pretty passes is a guy I'm going to get to interview again this weekend, and that's the great Dan Marino.
I think that's probably a pretty strong, you know, that's a pretty strong comparison because, you know, the ball came out of Marino's hands so fast, just like it does with Aaron Rodgers. His delivery, the circle that he makes with his arm to get the ball out is so quick, and that's part of, you know, his ability to get the ball out of his hand fast and avoid the rush. I think where I would give Rodgers maybe a nod over Marino is Rodgers can move around. You don't realize how good an athlete he is and how he's able to move around in the pocket and buy himself a just that little extra bit of time. I saw it last night a couple times against pressure early in the game, and there were people around his legs, and he could just move, and he can throw the ball with his feet in a lot of different positions. And, you know, again, Marino could do that same thing, although Marino, particularly late in his career, really struggled to get away from pressure. The other thing about the two of them that I really think is amazing is just their accuracy, Neil. Mm. You see where he puts the ball. And it's, I wish I was on the telestrator so I could really define what we call spot throwing and how he throws always the receiver away from the DB. And he knows how he knows the position of the defensive back relative to his receiver and puts the ball in such small windows, such accuracy. And he does it when he's being rushed. He does it when he has time. He does it on the run. He does it from all different throwing angles, all different arm angles, all different foot platforms. I mean, it's just a phenomenal, phenomenal performance last night.
Yeah, Jeff, that accuracy is so important, isn't it? We had the Dolphins and Bills game on Sky on Sunday night, and the first interception that Ryan Tannehill threw went in and out of the hands of Jarvis Landry. And you watch it at first speed, full speed, and you're like, oh, come on, Jarvis, make the catch. You know, it was a little slant pattern across the middle. And you're like, you got to have that. You got to make that play. I watched the second replay, and I was like, I'm not sure on where he put that football. Then I watched the third replay, and the ball's just on Landry's back hip. Now, you still got to make the catch, yes. But that fine margin, because if he puts that ball half a yard the other way, so it's on his front hip, so he can keep moving and keep running, that might not be an interception.
That's exactly right. And you look at a guy like Rodgers, and Rodgers has the ability to throw his players into extra yardage. And what I mean by that is, let's say the defensive player is closing from outside in. He'll throw the ball on the inside half of his receiver so that the receiver can catch the ball and turn away from the defender. And that saves his receiver from big hits, but it also gets him extra yardage. And he threw some balls last night against press coverage that just, I mean, you can't throw the football better than that. And I think that's one of the things that I truly enjoy the most when I watch Aaron Rodgers. The quickness with he can get the ball out of his hands, the accuracy that he throws the football with, and just his total control, his demeanor as a quarterback is so just unflappable.
Yeah, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions for Aaron Rodgers last week. Right, let's say a look around the NFL then and ahead to week 4. Jeff, if I whisper, by the way, it's because I'm in the NFL UK office, and I'm in an office that we've never used actually before, but it's not a storeroom, so it's a step up. But the walls are paper.
Are you in Alistair's office?
I'm not. I'm actually. I'm not. No, I'm not. No, I'm not that brave. But the walls are paper thin here, and next door, Alistair Kirkwood, who you just mentioned, the head of NFL UK, is being interviewed by Sky Sports. So I don't want my voice all over the background of it. So if I turn into a sort of whispering commentator, maybe it'll add some drama to it. But there's some drama for Jared Allen because he's been traded from the Bears to the Panthers. Is this a better fit for him? Because the Bears were trying to make him an outside linebacker. Jared's not been that throughout his career. So now he's with a team he's gone from a team that's 0-3 to 3-0.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing for everybody, because when you look at Jared Allen, he was brought in late in the Phil Emery regime to try and help a really bad defense and give them an edge pass rusher that they needed so badly. Then he's in Chicago for a year, and then there's a regime change and a scheme change on defense. Fangio brings in the 3-4. He's never been an outside linebacker. He tried to make the conversion. I talked to a friend of mine in Chicago who coaches on the staff in Chicago. I asked him how he was doing right before the first game, and he was kind of non-committal. He didn't really want to say, which told me he
tells
was
you everything.
Yeah, and so I think this will give him new life. He's going to a defense in Carolina that needs an edge pass rusher. He can be a situational pass rusher. Doesn't have to play every down, and can go back to doing the things that he does well, which is get himself upfield and get after the quarterback. For Carolina, it's a win. For Chicago, it's a win. Clears up some cap space. Gives other guys a chance to play in a scheme that they were brought in, drafted and signed as free agents to play in. And I think helps the locker room in Chicago because, again, it's a breath of fresh air for young guys and guys that have an opportunity. Not to say he was a problem in Chicago, because I don't believe he was. I just think that it's a better fit for everybody concerned.
Yeah. Jeff, you might hear some background noise. Sounds like Alistair's interview's finished and they're all laughing it up and making lots of noise. I shouldn't have bothered being quiet, should I?
I think they're kind of like, they like this podcast through the wall.
Obviously. Right? So, obviously, but they better be downloading it.
We just get a room full of new viewers, listeners, I guess.
Exactly. We're always in a different room every week. That's always entertaining for sure.
Can you play on the road, Neil? That's the big question.
Well,
can
this
you
time
play on the road?
It's an international series week, isn't it? With the Dolphins and Jets coming to Wembley. So actually, I'm thankful that I'm in an office. This time last year, do you remember I was doing it from a McDonald's car park, sitting in my car. It's progress.
I remember that. Lost on the M1.
Exactly. All right, so big news then, Jeff. Ben Roethlisberger is out. Looks like a minimum of 4 to 6 weeks. He took a hit on his left knee from Rams safety Mark Barron. And when I saw this first time, I thought ACL tear, and it looked really bad. So they're saying it's an MCL injury and a deep bone bruise. And from what I've heard, Jeff, the deep bone bruise is what's concerning them. I would, as a layman, I would think, oh, a bruise is a bruise. What's the concern with a deep bone bruise?
Well, it's just the pain factor and how long it takes for that to heal.
Yeah.
This is probably a minimum 4 week, probably more like 6 to 7 week injury. And so the good thing is there's no structural damage to the knee. There's not an ACL tear. There's not, an MCL tear. There's nothing that's going to cost him his season. Although this is going to be big now for the Steelers because, they were so reliant on Ben and what he could do from the quarterback position in their offense. They just get Le'Veon Bell back, and you think, here we go. We're going to get healthy and really start to really make yards on offense. And doggone, they lose their leader. And now, again, thank goodness 5 weeks ago they brought in Michael Vick, or this could really be ugly in Pittsburgh. So I'm anxious to see how this thing works out, because Todd Haley's going to have to restructure some of the things that he does. Certainly Mike's been there 5 weeks. But, the interesting thing about that 5 week period, he got there real late in training camp, got some training camp game time. But once you start prepping for the season, the backup quarterback, you know, gets very, very few, if any, reps in practice. So he's going to have an awful lot of preparation to do this week. And he has not thrown with the number one receivers. You know, the backup quarterback is running the scout team and, you know, throwing to the receivers that are backups and practice roster guys.
Yeah, the Steelers wanted, I think they wanted to give Landry Jones a good look in the preseason. They didn't like what they saw, and so they went out and got Michael Vick. So there were a couple of thoughts I had on this, Jeff. The first one is, again, you mentioned how he was going to work into Todd Haley's offense. What the Steelers have become is a quick three-step drop, good decision from Ben Roethlisberger, and get the ball out fast. Now, we know Michael Vick can get the ball out fast. He has a cannon for an arm. I don't think that's diminished over his time in the NFL. But then you want good decisions, and I haven't seen good decisions out of Michael Vick for a lot of his career. That would be my first worry. And point number two, and this is what I wanted to ask you about, you know, backup quarterbacks and what your expectation is as a coach, because when Michael Vick was in New York with the Jets, he fully admitted he wasn't prepared one week and he had to go into the game, and it didn't work out because he wasn't prepared. As a coach, is there any excuse when your backup quarterback isn't prepared?
Well, I think it comes down to, when you say, is he physically prepared? It's really difficult for them to be physically prepared because they just don't get enough repetitions in practice. Now, the mental aspect of it, that's really on him, because they all sit in the quarterback room together. They all watch the same tape. They all get the same, you know, tape sent to their home, you know, their iPads at home. They all have access to all the information. And so, again, I think the mental preparation just comes down to, you know, maturity. And the issue, one of the issues that Michael's had over the course of his career is, you know, his preparation habits. And does he prepare well enough? You know, it was just one of the things that got him in Atlanta. It was the same. There were whispers of it in both Philadelphia and New York. He's an extremely talented guy. Here's the thing that I think will happen positive for the Steelers with Michael Vick. Michael Vick's a guy that's well-respected and well-liked in the locker room.
Yes.
So I think the players will rally around him. They want to see him succeed. Now, he's got to hold up his end of the bargain now by, you know, preparing as a pro, and to realize now for the next 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 7 weeks maybe, he's got to take over the captaincy of that ship and write it, keep them on course. They gotta win. Let's say he's out 6 weeks. If the Steelers can go 4-2 over that six, that's big for them. Then he can hand the job back to Big Ben, and they can make a run. And I think that's what's really at stake here. If they go 2-4 during that period, it's going to be tough on the Steelers.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. You can galvanize the locker room, Jeff. When I've traveled around the NFL and I interview young players about who they like watching when they were growing up, Michael Vick is often an answer that comes out. So I think he'll certainly do that. There's a lot of talk around the NFL, Jeff, and this is why it's good that I think we record this on a Tuesday, because we get to see how America reacts to the games that are played over the weekend and gives us some talking points. There is sort of a lot of concern in terms of what's being written and being said. Chad Greenway was on American radio saying that offensive lines not being able to do as much physical work in the off-season is having an effect on protecting quarterbacks. So you look at the quarterbacks that have gone down so far. We're without Tony Romo now. We're without Jay Cutler. Now we're without Ben Roethlisberger, stars of the NFL, big names that people want to watch play. And it was written about this week as well, about that the NFLPA would be looking and wondering about off-season workouts and, you know, whether that being held back is affecting the play on the field. But then I thought, well, Tony Romo got hurt because he fumbled the snap and then dived on the ball. And Cutler got hurt as he was chasing down a pick six. So Ben is actually, out of those three, the only one who's been hurt with a team blitzing him. But what are your thoughts on that and the work that offensive linemen get through during an offseason?
Well, I think they've done everything that they can do to protect the players in the offseason. What was happening was it was getting out of hand in terms of the amount of work that was actually being done, and a lot of it in what we call shells, which are the little soft spider pads that guys would wear on their shoulders and helmets. And it was almost, I remember when I went to mini camp in Kansas City. I mean, it was full. The only thing they didn't go to the ground. Mm. And that's what, you know, that's what those little soft pads on. And so I think the Players Association stepped in, did the right thing, really limited what the coaches could do in terms of the physical, you know, pounding that these guys take. The preparation to, you know, around the league about with the offensive line, I think that's an overblown thing. And I'm kind of interested that Chad would say that, because your ability to protect the quarterback is based on your ability to move your feet, recognize blitzes, and, you know, your athleticism. The challenge for offensive linemen is that the defensive players are so athletic and so fast, and there's so many things that they have to see. But as you mentioned, in every one of the cases of those three quarterbacks that went down, in Ben's case, it is a blitz. He's getting blitzed, but the blitzer loses his feet and is actually crawling towards Ben to make the sack, and it's just one of those freak things where his knee got caught up underneath him. I don't think it was a question of an offensive lineman couldn't, you know, respond fast enough. And again, Cutler's was a hamstring chasing the guy that picked the ball off. And Romo, again, on a fumble, it's just got his arm caught up underneath him. So those things are going to happen. It's unfortunate because obviously the league wants the marquee guys playing. But I don't see a rash of, you know, quarterback hits that are, I think, you can trace to unprepared offensive linemen.
Jeff, how far apart are we at the moment? About 4,000 miles, would you say, give or take?
About 4,000 miles, yes, sir.
All right, so you can't hit me when I ask you this next question, but you can hang up the phone. So don't hang up the phone. Bear with me, because I know you're a defensive guy at heart. Will they ever reduce the number of blitzes? Will they ever change the rules to protect quarterbacks even further?
Boy, I hope not. I mean, you know, they've restricted defensive coaches about as much as I think you can. You know, the 5-yard no chuck zone, you know, the strike zone on the quarterback is now so small. You know, the rules for the defensive lineman about, you know, how they have to pull off, which I think are really crazy. I don't know how you ask a 300-pound man who's working to get off of another guy in short space to stop his all that momentum. I mean, that's almost defies physics. But those are the rules, and that's what we have to play in. So I know that this is always going to be an issue whenever the marquee guy goes down. But the reality of the game is there is a certain amount of implied risk when you play quarterback in this league. That's why I think the guys, you know, I've said this time and time again, if you've ever been down on the field, if you've ever been close to what the quarterback has to experience on every play of the game, you recognize how tuned in, focused, and courageous those guys are to stand in there with all that going on around them.
Jeff, you showed fantastic restraint there. Fantastic restraint. Let's talk about quarterback just a little bit more, and then we'll move on to some of the games. But Colin Kaepernick then, Jeff, threw 4 interceptions this past weekend as the San Francisco 49ers lost to Arizona, 47-7. He had 2 pick sixes in the first quarter. So they're down 14-0 on the road. It's effectively game over. Kaepernick has come out and said, this one's on me, which is kind of what you'd want him to do after that. But I looked at that game and they tried, where the interceptions came were, you know, you've played it. I know you've played and coached against Colin Kaepernick. All of the interceptions came on throws where they were outside the numbers. So he's trying to throw outside the numbers, which has been a weakness of his. He was trying to be a pocket quarterback. You could see that. And I wonder, I know that eventually you want quarterbacks to be pocket passers. That's what wins in the NFL traditionally over the years. You know, Joe Montana once said they run out of the pocket and the defenders hit them back into the pocket because you can't live that way forever. But I saw what Tyrod Taylor did with Buffalo, and they were very creative with him. And I wonder if Colin Kaepernick isn't up to being a pocket passer, whether you have to just take the reins off and let him be Colin Kaepernick. In the same way, I guess Cam Newton is a dual threat in Carolina. I wouldn't always advocate that. And, you know, I'm all for pocket passers. But if your guy's not up to it, do you have to create a scheme that he's more comfortable with?
Well, I think you're exactly correct. You know, Todd Haley's going to have to modify his scheme in Pittsburgh for Michael Vick. You look at going the other direction, one of the best things that Gary Kubiak has done in the last week is what? modify his offense to suit the guy who's running it. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, they're back in the pistol again. You look at one of the reasons why Tyrod Taylor has had so much success. He's a guy who really hadn't thrown very many passes in the NFL and has come out in three games and looks like he's got a chance to be a good one. It's Joe Roman. And why do you say that? I said because Joe Roman was the guy that got so much out of Colin Kaepernick, got Colin Kaepernick to lead a team to the Super Bowl.
He called a great game in Miami as well on Sunday night.
Yeah, there's a guy who understands that you have to, as much as you can, mold your scheme to fit the guy who's, you know, the captain of the ship. And if you try and put a square peg in a round hole, it usually doesn't work very well.
Jeff, I'll take this question out of the mailbag, and then we'll look at some of the other games from week three in the NFL. This comes from Graham Faulkner, who says, will there be no mention of how out of depth your mate in San Francisco appears to be, Neil? Referring to Jim Tomsula. Do you want to take that one?
Well, I think here's the reality with that situation. It was really interesting over here because I heard an analyst here in the States talk about the Niners after the first game, and he said that's one of the eight best rosters in the National Football League, and that's a 10-win team, and everybody does, you know, everybody's missed on evaluation of the 49ers because, you know, I think we talked about how we thought it was going to be a tough year for Jimmy. We knew he'd get him to play hard. We knew all those things would be, you know, positives for the Niners. The question was, were they good enough? And I think we see now 3 weeks in that they do have some serious deficiencies. And yes, they are well coached. Yes, they do play hard. Yes, yes, yes. There's a lot of positives about what's going on in San Francisco. They're turning over a roster. It's just the reality of their situation. And it really, I think, became glaring in the Arizona game.
Yeah.
Just how much better Arizona is than San Francisco right now. And so, you know, I don't think you can pin that on Jimmy. When you say Jimmy's out of his depth, I think the reality of it is he's in a very difficult situation, one where you're, like I say, you're turning over a roster. You're trying to change a lot of things about the organization. Whether that's right or wrong, that's not what's at issue here. It's whether he's, you know, able to deal with the situation. The reality of it is, I don't care. You put Vince Lombardi or Tom Landry or, you know, anybody in that same situation, you're going to struggle. That's just the reality of the league. It's very difficult to win in the National Football League. It's very difficult to win in pro football. It's particularly difficult to win if you're not good enough. And in some areas, they're just not good enough. They've lost too many top-line players. You can't have the losses that they've had and expect that you're just going to roll right along.
No, and I saw Brian Billick of the NFL Network, Super Bowl winning coach with the Ravens, of course, he wrote this week that this game has been, and always will be about personnel.
But the number one thing is player acquisition. Number in all levels of football, but particularly in pro football, because the talent, the difference between talent is so minute. And so if you can have better players, you get the edge at the most number of positions. Your matchup is a better matchup than the other guy has. You have the best chance to win. And so it is about personnel acquisition, and it's particularly critical at certain positions. You know, we talk about quarterback all the time. That's absolutely true. We talk about pass rusher. Yes, that's true. Corner. Yes, that's true. Well, look at those critical positions in places that are losing, and typically what you find is you're just not good enough there.
All right, let's have a look at a couple of other games that caught our eye in week three, and then we'll make our picks for week four. And I want to start with your Raiders, Jeff. They won their first away game, snapping an 11-game losing streak. They win 27-20 at the Cleveland Browns. Here's what I want to talk about with the Raiders, Jeff, and see if we can dangle that carrot of hope for Raider Nation, because Derek Carr was over 300 yards. Okay, Derek Carr's in his second year at quarterback. Latavius Murray, 139 yards and a touchdown. He's in his third year. Amari Cooper's gone over 100 yards, second game in a row. He was 8 catches, 134 yards. He's in his first year. Khalil Mack, he had 2 sacks. He's in his second year. He's very explosive. Here's some young talent now. You want to talk about personnel. Here's some young guys you can grow old with for the next 10 years in Oakland.
Yeah, and I think that's real positive for Raider Nation. You know, this is maybe the fruits of Reggie McKenzie's labors in as he went about the process of changing an old and under-talented roster when he got there. Now, they went a couple years ago and tried the stopgap approach and signed a bunch of, you know, one-year guys and didn't work for them. But what they've done is they've been able to amass some young talent that will grow together, hopefully, if there's, you know, they can keep them together and don't have injuries and those things. But again, look at the positions that we're talking about. We're talking about impact wide receivers. We're talking about quarterbacks, and we're talking about pass rushers. Those are the areas that you want to be good. You want to be good with the guys that handle the football and the guys that can attack the, you know, attack the quarterback, whether that's as a corner or as a pass rusher.
Bengals moved to 3-0, Jeff, and I thought they showed some sort of mental toughness to come back late against Baltimore. Another team with some mental toughness, I think, this year is the Atlanta Falcons. So they're down 28-14 on the road against the Dallas Cowboys. It looked like the survive without Tony Romo era was going to get off to a good start for the Cowboys. Joseph Randle's running well in the first half. He had minus 5 yards in the second half. I mean, tell us about halftime adjustments, how important they are in the NFL. And obviously, Dan Quinn and the Falcons, they made some.
Yeah, no question about it. And I thought it was an outstanding coaching job by the Atlanta coaching staff and Coach Quinn. And here's what I saw, Neil, is initially in the game, you know, Whedon had a lot of success throwing the ball short. And the Falcons were playing their customary, you know, high zone coverages, right? And they made an adjustment to really almost treat, it appeared to me like they were treating every down as if you're playing in the red zone, right? Where they really squatted on the routes. They challenged him to throw the ball up the field. And that was the first thing that they were able to do. That got more guys around the line of scrimmage, so you're able to help stop the run. And then on the other side of the football, they played to help their defense. They found the running game. And they really, I thought, had an outstanding second half. Now, this is interesting because if you look at them, that's starting to be their profile because they've been down in a number of games and have come back. They don't panic. They hang together. They play hard. They have a quarterback who can make them some plays, and they got maybe as hot a wide receiver as there is in the game right now outside. And they lean on those guys at critical moments, and those guys have been able to deliver, and they're playing disciplined, physical, tough football. All the things that, you know, Dan Quinn promised when he got the Atlanta job, you're seeing evidence of those things.
What did you make of Buffalo's 41-14 win over Miami, Jeff? We had that game on Sky Sports. I think I called it embarrassing. I called it putrid. And that's not the Bills. That was all credit to the Bills. I was referring to the Dolphins. I'm not quite sure what kind of interview I'm going to get out of Ndamukong Suh up at the stage at Trafalgar Square for this weekend's fan rally, but should be interesting. But what did you make of that game?
Well, I think there's really two different storylines. I mean, number one, for the Bills, what a huge bounce back win on the road after a tremendously disappointing loss against New England at home the week before. Rex rallied his team. They played extremely well on defense, and Tyrod Taylor continues to grow and make plays. It's interesting, Percy Harvin, who's been kind of like a situational receiver but really not a number one over the course of his career, really has, you know, played well early in the season because they haven't gotten much out of Sammy Watkins. It was interesting to see Charles Clay go back and bite the hand that fed him for so many years. But then you look on the other side of it, Neil, and you got to really wonder about Miami. You know, where is the mental toughness? Where is the defense that, you know, on paper should be just, I mean, a force, and you don't see it. You don't feel it when you watch them play. It's almost that same question that you always have about the Dolphins. They're better than they play. And, you know, it's got to get straightened out, or it's probably going to, you know, cost some people some jobs before it's over.
Yeah, I thought I thought Greg Roman called a great game. He put the Bills into matchups that the Dolphins couldn't cope with. I think if you're looking at it from a very top level, the worrying thing is it looked like the Dolphins didn't even care that they were getting embarrassed in front of their home fans. Here's a little stat for you, Jeff. So you went 15-1 last week in the picks. You absolutely hammered me. You were 11. I was 11-5. You went 15-1. Do you know the only one that let you down?
What game did I miss?
You picked the Dolphins.
Oh my gracious!
Otherwise, you'd have had
doing that.
You don't ever do it again. You'd have had a perfect week. What else? What else caught your eye in week three, Jeff? What other teams impressed or disappointed? Whichever.
Well, I think again, Arizona continues to really impress me, and I think that is, you know, that's a team that has a chance if they can stay healthy and if they keep playing the way they're playing. I think they're extremely well coached. I think Arians has done a phenomenal job. Their personnel people have put together a good roster for them. They're physical. They play great defense. They got playmakers all over the field on defense. You know, everybody worried when Todd Bowles left whether the defense was going to take a step back. That certainly hasn't been the case. So I like them. I thought the Packers looked stronger than I've seen the Packers look, particularly on defense. I mean, they got after the quarterback last night, and that had been one of the things that had kind of held them back was their ability to rush the passer, and you get 8 sacks last night. So I thought the Packers played extremely well. You know, Denver's going to be an interesting team to me because that defense continues to impress you. And, you know, they've got a lot of older guys that they're getting some great play out of DeMarcus Ware right now. Aqib Talib, you know, I heard him say in an interview he thinks it's the best defense he's ever been on. He's been on some pretty good defenses. So I think it's going to be interesting in Denver. Well, that thing continues to play itself out. The Patriots are just they're almost playing with that chip on their shoulder, like we'll show the entire world that, how good we are. So.
Do you know Brady's on course? Brady's on pace for about 5,900 yards. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Somebody told me that if Gronk keeps going at this pace, he'll score 39 touchdowns over the season. Some crazy number like that. Certainly, they're not going to be able to continue that. But man, oh man, oh man, they really look like a good football team. And you know, defensively, I think they're a little better than a lot of people have given them credit for.
Yeah, Patriots scored on all 9 of their offensive possessions, then took knees on their 10th. By contrast, the Chicago Bears punted every single time they had the football in their 26-0 loss to the Seattle Seahawks. We had this question from Dave Harrison, and you've just touched on it, Jeff. Predictions for the undefeated Cardinals this season. I just want to see Carson Palmer stay healthy because it was so disappointing last year when this team was really fun to watch, really exciting to watch. They fly around on defense. They seem to make plays from various places on their team, various parts of their roster step up week after week. And when they lost their franchise quarterback, they lost their way. So all I want is, you know, let them have a fair crack at it because I'm curious to see how far this Cardinals team can go. If they're at full strength.
I agree. I think that he's the big key. Can they keep him upright? Can they keep him healthy? And if they can, that all indications are that that's going to be a team that when we get down into the time when the games are the biggest, is going to be right there ready to make a run.
All right, Jeff, we'll start to look ahead to week 4 in the NFL then. It's a big one for British fans, big one for me. I'm hosting the fan rally at Trafalgar Square on Saturday. Hope a lot of fans can get along to that. We've got some true legends coming and visits from both the New York Jets and Miami Dolphins. That starts at 12 noon on Saturday. Then I'm going to be hosting the tailgate party at Wembley Stadium on Sunday from 9 until lunchtime. We don't have the game on Sky Sports, but you can watch it on BBC. And it's 2:30 kickoff on Sunday, the Dolphins and the Jets. So it's these are always fun weeks, Jeff. We've got to get you over for one of them soon, but it's great for British fans to have these games they can enjoy.
I think it's phenomenal, and I'm anxious to see, you know, what the excitement level on Trafalgar Square is going to be. I already, you know, through my Twitter account, have noticed a tremendous amount of Jets fans and Dolphins fans talking about how much they're looking forward to being around. You know, just the hype of having a game again, you know, in the International Series, having their team in London. And, you know, all NFL fans throughout the UK and Europe are going to, you know, benefit from this because it brings the circus of the NFL to town. And when the circus comes to town, everybody's going to have a good time.
Absolutely. But before the circus comes to town, we've got a Thursday night game, Baltimore at Pittsburgh. It's a tough one because Baltimore have been close a couple of games this year. In Denver, they probably had a chance to win that against the Broncos. Then they've been in a couple of wild ones and they've come out on the losing end. I guess you can't win those shootouts all the time, but you feel like they might get one of them soon. How do you think they fare in Pittsburgh?
You know what? It's such a tough one because, you know, the Steelers are finally starting to get healthy, getting all their tools back, and then they lose their quarterback. And then you look around on the other side of it, and Baltimore, it looks like, you know, Steve Smith, you know, found the fountain of youth, and he may reconsider that promise to retire. But, you look back the other way and you say defensively, which has always been their strength and always been the foundation of their program, they're struggling right now on defense. They can't rush the passer. They can't cover in the back end. And so, this one I think is going to be the home team is going to have the advantage in this. I think this is really going to be a close game. I'm absolutely, anxious to watch Michael Vick and see how he comes out and plays in this game.
So who are you taking?
You tell me what is, like I said, is it in Pittsburgh?
It's in Pittsburgh. It's
in Pittsburgh, and I'm going to take the Steelers because I just think that's a tough place to win. I think they get the home field advantage, and I think that, it's an interesting matchup. A team that right now has always been a defensive team in Baltimore is really being, it's a Joe Flacco show right now. On the other side of the coin, a team that's always been a defensive team was morphing into an offensive team, and now they got to go back and rely on their defense to win for them at home. So, again, we'll see. But I think Pittsburgh, because it's in Pittsburgh, I'll give them the nod.
All right. I think Steve Smith discovers the Fountain of Youth. He has an argument with the Fountain of Youth, smashes it in the face, and the Ravens win. Let's move on.
There's a pretty good probability on some of that right there.
Probably. Let's move on then to Sunday's games. The Jets at the Dolphins could end up being a defensive struggle, Jeff. If Miami can wake up defensively, and the Jets, we know they've got 9 former first-round draft picks on defense. I'm actually going for the Jets with this one.
You know what? I'm going to go for the Jets, too. I just think that right now Miami hasn't shown me anything in the first 3 weeks to make me believe that it's even important to them. While the Jets, on the other hand, take away Brandon a couple bonehead plays, they're showing improvement every week, and I think, they've got some playmakers. Decker, I think, is going to be back for them or scheduled to be back for them, and that'll help them. So I'm going to take the Jets.
All right. Let's move on to another game on Sunday, Houston at Atlanta. So I like what I'm seeing with the Falcons. I think they keep rolling this week, and I'm not sure Houston have actually got their quarterback of the future on the roster. They kind of don't know if they're settled on Mallett or Hoyer, and there's indecision. I like Atlanta in this one, Jeff.
I'm going to go the same way. I think the Falcons are on a roll. They're going to come home. You're facing a Houston team with really struggling on offense. I mean, struggling at the quarterback position, and you got to have quarterback play if you're going to win in this league. So I'm going to take Atlanta at home.
All right, the New York Giants at the Buffalo Bills. So we see all this stuff about, if the Giants could be, if this had happened and that had happened, they could be 3-0. But, if my auntie had certain body parts, she'd be my uncle, but it doesn't mean it's happening. What do you think on this one in Buffalo?
I don't want to talk about your family, Neil, your auntie and your uncle, but I'm going to tell you, I'm going to take Buffalo. I just think that I see flaws in the Giants. I just see defensively they struggle so much. I watched the game the other day. They really struggled to close out a game that shouldn't even been close with Washington. They have to give up a 99-yard kickoff return, late in the game, struggle to execute on onside kicks. They just don't look like a good football team right now to me. I think they've got some weapons, and I think they've got some guys that, can make plays outside, but I think this Buffalo defense will really get after, Eli.
All right, I'm going Buffalo as well, and this is a always professional podcast, as you know. So to the tune of cardboard boxes being sellotaped up, we will continue with the Inside the Huddle podcast in the background. Oakland at Chicago. Oh, I think their Raiders might go 3-1, Jeff. I have no signs that Jimmy Clausen is going to win a game for the Chicago Bears. I like what I'm seeing out of the Raiders. I'm going to go Raiders.
You know what? I agree with you. I don't think that Jimmy Clausen, you looked at Jimmy Clausen's numbers, you looked at his performance last week. He obviously didn't have Alshon Jeffrey. That's going to hurt you. But I just don't know if he's good enough to beat you. I think the Raiders are starting to play with a little bit of confidence now. And, interesting, somebody made a parallel the other day between Derek Carr and Brett Favre. And you know what? When you look at them physically, when you watch them throw, that's not that hard to see. Now, I'm not saying he's anywhere close to Brett Favre, But I see some of that gunslinger in him. I see that big arm. I see all those things that make you want to say, this kid's got a chance to be a good one. And you mentioned all the other guys that are playing well for him, all those young kids that are playing well for him. So I'm hopeful that, you know, that this trend continues for the Raiders, and I'm going to take the Raiders over Chicago.
Yeah, I like Derek Carr a lot. I think he's got a bright future. Kansas City at Cincinnati. So the Chiefs finally throw a touchdown pass to their wide receivers, but they lose on Monday Night Football. It seems like they couldn't keep pace with Aaron Rodgers. This is a talented Chiefs team, but I'm probably going to go Cincinnati at home, Jeff. What do you make of that one?
Well, I'm going to say this. It's interesting. I think the statistic I saw the other day was after the 9-0 start, Andy Reid's team has been 12-9 in games since that time. Mm. So, you know, they have a little bit of a, you know, that you got to look through the numbers a little bit. But here's what I think that Kansas City will do. They're not facing Aaron Rodgers this week. They're facing Andy Dalton. And Andy Dalton's playing well right now. Yes, he is. And their receivers are playing real well right now. But I think Kansas City will go in there and bounce back. I really think that, you know, they're a good football team, and, you know, they'll get that straightened out, and you know, whether Alex Smith is good enough to get you to the Super Bowl, I will talk about that one more, but I still think Kansas City's a better football team than we saw last night.
All right, so you're going Kansas City, I'm going Cincinnati in that one. It's all going on in this office now, Jeff. They're wheeling in trolleys, loading up cardboard boxes. Oh, boy. So, Jacksonville at Indianapolis. So, Jacksonville hammered in New England. I do think this is clearly a better team than last year. There's still some worrying signs with Indianapolis. I mean, it was dramatic and it was exciting, but they could have easily lost in Tennessee, and we'd be talking about them being 0-3. Who do you like in this one? Colts are at home.
I'm going to take the Colts at home. I just think they've got a better roster. I still agree with you that what you said last week, I think, I don't know if I'd describe it as a house of cards, but I think there's some really unsettling things going on inside that organization, you know, in terms of the relationship with the head coach and, you know, the general manager and, you know, his criticism of the quarterback. And I think Andrew handled it extremely well. Still see too many of those, you know, what you call, you know, impact plays, negative impact plays by him. Too many interceptions. He's got to continue to develop as a guy that protects the football. But I just think that Indianapolis at home is too talented for Jacksonville right now.
Yeah, I'm going to go Indianapolis to win that one as well. So we're both taking the Colts to win. Carolina at Tampa Bay.
You know, this is an interesting game, right? I'm going to take Carolina, but I think this is going to be a struggle. I think they're going to have their hands full with Tampa Bay.
Who are you going, Jeff?
I'm going to take Carolina.
Yeah, I'm going to take Carolina as well. Tampa Bay are playing well on defense, but they're just you know, they had chances to win that game in Houston. They missed some field goals, and I think that came back to hurt them. I think Cam's playing really well, so. Both going Carolina in that one then. Philadelphia got their first win. Now we're looking at Philadelphia at Washington in week four.
I'm going to take Philadelphia. I don't think Washington's very good. I think Philadelphia is still finding their way. But, again, I think that win was really, really critical for the Eagles last week, and I think they'll start to build on that now.
All right, I'm going to go. I think Philadelphia get their second win of the season here. So I think they... Yeah, they lent on Ryan Matthews. I think he made some big plays for them. I don't know if I trust Kirk Cousins, so I'm going Philadelphia. Let's move on then to the later games on Sunday afternoon, and the Cleveland Browns at the San Diego Chargers. San Diego won in week one, but it's been disappointing since then, Jeff.
Yeah, you know, and this is a game that they need. They need to come back home you know, it's a tough trip for Cleveland. Anytime you go from the East Coast to the West Coast or Eastern time zone to the West Coast time zone, it's very difficult. I just don't think Cleveland roster-wise is there yet, and I think that San Diego will bounce back at home.
Yeah, I think San Diego at home are a different team. Do you think we should – I know Josh McCown got banged up a little bit again. Do you think with the Browns we should just go with Johnny Manziel and be damned, Jeff? Or what's your thought on that? I guess there's 52 other players in that roster on that locker room, though. So you go with whoever gives you the best chance to win, do you?
Yeah, and that's the reality, because Mike Pettine knows that, you know, every head coach in professional football, you're on a short leash, and he talked about that, didn't want to have his quarterback on a short leash because he thinks that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. But the same thing is true for coaches. Now, the reality of it is, if as an organization, you've got to know if that first-round draft pick can play or not play. And I think that's what will happen is if they don't get hot with McCown and start winning some games, that there's going to be pressure from above that, okay, let's put Manziel in and see what he can do, because we've got to move on as an organization. Whether you're with us or not with us, this organization's got to move forward.
All right, this is our second game on Sky Sports on Sunday. The St. Louis Rams at the Arizona Cardinals, and I've not quite seen enough out of Nick Foles yet to get excited. I like the Rams' defense. I like what we've seen from them in terms of their physicality, but you know, I don't see the Rams going to Arizona and winning. I would be picking the Cardinals for this one.
No, I think Bruce, you know, it was interesting, his comments after the game the other night. They won the game, and he talking to his football team, and he said, what this is, fellas, is one game, one win. That's it.
Yeah, right? He won't let them rest.
Exactly. So I think that's the kind of leadership that Cardinal team needs. I just, St. Louis is so all over the place. You know, you never know what you're going to get with them offensively. And so I'm going to go again with the Cardinals, who I think are a better football team.
All right. The Minnesota Vikings are 2-1. Sorry. They're playing against the 3-0 Denver Broncos. So looks like Mike Zimmer's going to have the kind of defense that I'm tempted to pick the Vikings here. It's on the road in Denver. Denver are undefeated. But I think that the Vikings are playing well on defense. And they kind of got Adrian Peterson there, who can keep the football away from Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos. I should go Denver here, but I'm going to actually pick Minnesota.
Well, you know what? You're right. You should go Denver here, because I think Denver at home, and I think Denver's defense. And it's still early enough in the year where the weather's not a factor, as much of a factor for Peyton. I just really think that Denver's defense gives them an edge and the home field advantage. This will be a real interesting game, and I think you'd agree with me on this one. This will be a real test, and we'll see who the Vikings really are. Mm. Now, if they go down into Denver and beat Denver on the road, then that's going to make a lot of people sit up and go, ooh, this is the Viking team we thought might have a chance to make a run. And certainly in Green Bay, they're going to pay an awful lot of attention to it. If they go down there and get beat by Denver, particularly if they get beat by 10 points or more, then we're going to say, okay, same old Vikings.
Coach, if you go down by 3 or 4 touchdowns, you take a few risks in your play calling, don't you? That's what I'm doing. I need to catch up.
You got to push the envelope sometime, brother.
Yeah, I'm not just coming back. I'm none of that one play at a time rubbish. I'm going Hail Mary. Which is why I'm picking the 49ers to beat the Green... No, I'm not. So our next game is Green Bay at San Francisco. There's no way Colin Kaepernick keeps pace with Aaron Rodgers. So even though Green Bay are away from the comforts of Lambeau Field, I think they get the win and compound what's been a tough start for the 49ers.
This is a trap game for Green Bay. Because you come off of a big win on Monday night. You got to go across the country, and you're playing a team that just got beat up 2 weeks in a row. So this is not the kind of game. If you're Mike McCarthy, this is not the kind of game you want to play. Now, you're better than they are, and you should win the football game. And I'm going to take Green Bay. Oh. I think this is going to be a better game than people think.
I thought for a minute. I was like, go on, Jeff. Go on. Go on, pick the nine.
Come on,
Jeff. Put your money where your mouth is. Sunday night game, Dallas at New Orleans. This is interesting because Sunday night football, they build it up in America. We have it on Sky Sports now. It's football night in America. It's the game of the week. It could be Luke McCown against Brandon Weed. Oh, I shouldn't laugh. Sorry, I shouldn't laugh. Brandon Weeden and Luke McCown are well worth watching, but this is not what they were expecting. I still think Dallas probably, I don't know. This is a tough one. What do you think, Jeff?
You know, it's interesting. Luke McCown was our quarterback in 2003.
And he looked good. And he looked good last week.
I thought he looked good inside that offense. You know, he's been there a couple of years, so he knows what the expectation level is. Breeze has really helped him. Breeze is going to be on the headsets, helping coach the quarterbacks during the course of the game. I think that's a positive for Luke. What I really don't like in New Orleans right now is what I see on defense. You know, Brandon Browner's not playing very well. Mm. Actually, he's been a liability for him. And I'm starting to see some sideline stuff between Sean Payton and Rob that, you know, indicates that there's some friction there. So you know, that's not good anytime you have that. Now the Cowboys, you know, this is a big one for the Cowboys because they've got to be able to stay, you know, keep pace while Romo's hurt. You know, it's like we talked about with Pittsburgh. Now the guy that's minding the ship has got to, you know, got to steer through and just steward it. And, you know, Brandon Whedon, I'm not a big Brandon Whedon fan. Never was, even when he was at Oklahoma State. Yeah. But I think the Cowboys can run the ball.
Yeah.
That's what they'll do. And the Saints struggle to play run defense. So I'm going to give the Cowboys the nod here.
I'm going to go Dallas as well. Jeff, I just talked over you there in the line cut. Where was Luke McCown, your quarterback?
At Louisiana Tech in 2003.
Okay, okay. Yeah, he did. I thought he looked all right last week. So
he's a really talented kid. He's got he's got big arm. He's got good feet. He can do a lot of things. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how he get, you know, with this opportunity to play.
All right. So we're both going Dallas in that one. Anyway, last game of the week, then week four, Detroit at Seattle. So Detroit are in a bit of a mess, frankly, at the moment. They're not getting it done on offense. They're missing. They're missing DeAndre Levy on defense, I think, quite a bit. So I'm going to have to see Seattle right the ship and get back to 2-2 here, Jeff.
Yeah, big one for Seattle at home. You know, they're kind of feasting on these NFC North teams. And, you know, they're starting to play, you know, they're getting Graham involved now offensively. They're still playing great defense. And Lockett has given them a huge edge in the kicking game. So I'm going to take Seattle at home.
All right, so that's wrapping up week four's predictions. I've got one last question from the mailbag, Jeff, because we're almost out of time on this week's Inside the Huddle, but we're going full circle. We're coming back and we're going to talk about Aaron Rodgers. And this question is from Dan Lenahan, who says, Jeff, why is it that Aaron Rodgers is still able to catch teams offside even when they spend a week preparing for him?
Well, because you can't prepare for exactly how he handles the hard count, where he changes the cadence. They use an unrhythmic cadence. So one of the things that they do an unbelievable job with is once they draw, not only just drawing people offside, because that happens in every football game, but they know immediately what to do once there is what we call a free play, where the defense is jumped off sides, the flags have flown, but the whistle hasn't blown. That now becomes a no-risk play or a free play for the offense. And immediately, all the routes change. All the routes convert. And even the play changes, even if it's a run play, because Rodgers knows he can't get hit. And so he goes ahead, and the receivers just turn and run for the end zone. And he throws it up because he knows if it's a pick, it's going to, you know, he's got the penalty, so it's a no-risk play. Now, interestingly enough, he made one of those no-risk throws against Richard Sherman last year in the playoffs, and the officials blew the call. They didn't. The guy jumped offside, and they didn't call it, and it cost them because it was in the end zone. It was going in. It was in the, you know, in the score zone. But I think they do such an unbelievable job of changing the cadence, using a hard cadence, not a rhythmic cadence. His voice inflection changes. And, you know, you're a defensive lineman, and you come off the field, and you go to the sideline, and the defensive line coach is chewing your butt about, you got to get up the field. You got to get after him. We got to get pressure on the quarterback. So you try and jump a snap count. That's how it happens to you.
And is that a valuable thing to have in practice, Jeff? Because, you know, somebody who can really boom out a snap count. Because I think back to NFL Europe, and we had in training camp one year, he was a pretty skinny-looking quarterback for the Rhein Fire. He wasn't the greatest in terms of skills. Mike Fouts, he was the son of Dan Fouts, the great San Diego Chargers quarterback, but he had a booming voice. And I remember Pete Kuharchek telling me, you know, it's great for practicing not jumping offside. But the guy couldn't play quarterback at NFL Europe level, but he was a value during training camp because he had this big booming voice and this cadence, and it kind of got everyone prepared for listening out for snap counts.
Well, you know what's interesting? I watch all the time defensive, and this is one of my you know, cardinal sins as a defensive coach. On defense, and for all the coaches out there that are listening, if you're running a drill, a defensive drill, and it doesn't start on movement, it starts on sound, then you're coaching your players to jump off sides.
Yeah.
Because every defensive drill, and I it's amazing, Neil, as I go around and see training camps and, you know, other guys in pro football, I still see defensive line coaches go hot and the defensive linemen, you know, start to, you know, come off the ball. How in the world do you expect your guy not to jump off sides if you don't simulate in practice, and they have to have that sound. There has to be that non-rhythmic cadence, like you say. You have to work at it, and it's still difficult because they're always trying to get, you know, as much of the ball as they can, and they're trying to get off and get upfield. But you know, the guys that do it well really, really understand that what an advantage it is, because it's, like I say, it's a no risk free play for you.
Yeah, and Aaron Rodgers certainly takes advantage of those for the Green Bay Packers. They're undefeated on this young season. So, Jeff, let's just wrap up then. We will be back next week for Inside the Huddle. We've coped with interviews in the following room, cardboard boxes being packed around us. Yeah, we just get the job done, mate, don't we?
Hey, you know what? We don't care where we record. We don't care when we record. We don't care how we record. We just care that we record. That's us, Neil.
Excellent. Well, thanks for your time, Jeff. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. If you're going to the game at Wembley Stadium, if you're going to the fan rally or the tailgate parties, enjoy another special weekend here in the UK for NFL fans. Until next week, Jeff, say goodbye.